President Alexander Lukashenko has ruled Belarus as its virtual dictator since 1994. Elections are rigged, free speech is banned, and human rights are regularly violated. A documentary called Dangerous Acts has been made from smuggled footage and uncensored interviews of the unstable elements of Belarus, a group of artists who risk their lives to make anti-government theater. When the secret police target the group, its members find themselves torn between their art and concerns for their safety. This compelling documentary showcases the power of people who don't have many liberties but are still willing to risk their lives to change the world. It airs tonight on HBO, and I'm very pleased that it brings filmmaker Madeline Sackler to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you.
How did you meet the unstable elements of Belarus?
I met them in 2010, which was what would turn out to be 6 months before the rigged election and yet another violent crackdown by the KGB. And I started filming them then, you know, of course, not knowing that they would end up fleeing the country.
And they still call the secret police in Belarus the KGB. Even Russia has changed the name.
They do, yeah. They joke that that's the one thing that the dictatorship is still honest about, is that they still have the KGB.
Belarus has earned the title Europe's last dictatorship. Is it a complete dictatorship of the sort that the old-fashioned dictatorship that we are familiar with from the past?
It is. You know, Lukashenko, who was arguably freely elected when in the country's first election in 94, subsequently consolidated power and used really all of the traditional methods that dictatorships tend to use around the world in order to retain power. And so he's now able to be, quote, elected basically in perpetuity. And every 5 or 6 years or so, there's another election, and everyone wonders what percentage they'll claim he won by.
How much did he win by the last one?
The last one, I think it was about 76%. And then there will be another
one next year. So 24% of the country are dissatisfied with him.
Yeah, that was generous of them to assume, I think.
Did the country sign an agreement after the fall of the Soviet Union that Belarus was supposed to be a democracy?
They did. I mean, many of the countries in the region, all of them, were supposed to be democracies. And I think you can see sort of the bifurcation of those entities. So Poland, obviously, and Lithuania, the countries all bordering Belarus, and of course Ukraine, have all had very different histories since then.
What is Belarus's relationship with Poland and Ukraine?
Well, you know, I think Ukraine is really exposing sort of the fragility of these more nascent democracies and the fact that the people of the country, even when they want freedom, like in Ukraine or arguably in Belarus, it's a big question mark about whether or not they'll be able to achieve it. So, you know, Lukashenko has a very tenuous relationship with all of the bordering countries and, of course, a close relationship with Putin.
How many people are in this theater group, the Unstable Elements of Belarus? That's the name they've given themselves.
Yeah, well, so they're called the Belarus Free Theater, technically, although the government has referred to them as Unstable Elements.
So they take that name on proudly.
Yes, yeah, I think.
Do you see similarities between them and Pussy Riot?
Yeah, I mean, I think what all of these groups show, which is so important, is the value of free speech. And I think it's something that in places like the States, you know, we tend to take for granted. But conversations like these, open conversations about social difficulties, political differences, are incredibly important to have. And that's what organizations like the Belarus Free Theater are keeping alive.
How many people are in it, and what style of theater do they do?
It varies. So, you know, unfortunately, because of the extent of the oppression, actors will become afraid and drop out. At the time of the film, there were about 8 people that were full-time, and many of the original members of the group remain and, in fact, are still in Belarus trying to keep the theater alive today.
You focus on around a half dozen of them.
Mm-hmm.
These are pretty much the leaders of the group.
Yeah.
Even though it's a cooperative and ensemble, some people always tend to play leadership roles.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so we focused on 5 members of the theater, 2 of the founders and 3 of the actors, who I think are really representative, not just of the theater, but many people in Belarus as a whole, who are struggling against the dictatorship. And what you see in the film is those members of the group become separated from one another, which was why we had to continue smuggling footage out of the country. So there's a young mother that we follow. There's the 2 founders who have older daughters and an older actor who is forced into exile in his late 40s.
But weren't you directing this film from outside of Belarus?
Well, the footage that we filmed in Belarus was all directed remotely over Skype. So we were very dependent on technology. We used webcams so that I was able to do all of the interviews and then worked with a fearless underground cinematographer who was then smuggling the footage over the border for us and shipping us, cartons.
Was that dangerous?
Of hard drives. It was. I mean, she went to great risk, but we were very cognizant, all the time of what we were doing. And so she had state accreditation to own a camera so that if she were pulled over, it should be okay. And she wasn't ever filming at any of the protests you see in the film. That was all crowdsourced footage.
You have to get state accreditation to own a camera?
To have a camera, that's right. And similarly, to have a theater, which is why they're called underground. So they continue to make theater despite the fact that the Minister of Culture would prefer that they not.
What do these performers risk by working in opposition to the government? And how explicit is their opposition?
A lot. I mean, when they originally started the theater and tried to get it registered by the government and it became very clear that that would be impossible, it has extensive consequences. So they're not able to rent space. They're not able to legally sell tickets, or it's an economic crime. And many, many of them, I think now, in fact, all of them have been blacklisted. So they're not able to work legally in state jobs, which is the vast majority of work in the country. So there are economic consequences. There are physical consequences. The KGB has raided their theater many times. They can hear the click on their phones when they call loved ones, and bugs are found in their parents' houses. So it's not just a risk to yourself, but you become very concerned about your family members and friends.
I'd imagine there's also a risk to people who want to see them perform.
Yeah, definitely. So the KGB will film people as they come into the theater, and very frequently will stop you and ask for your identification. So in order to go see the theater, they tell you that you need to bring your passport every time.
Do they pass what they're doing through the censors?
No, absolutely not. I mean,
because often in totalitarian situations, dissidents get very subtle. They pass things through the censors, and the audience could read between the lines. But this group is not doing that.
No, they're not. I mean, to be honest, I don't think any line or moment in any of their plays would pass the censorship board. So, Chekhov is censored by the Ministry of Culture. So it's an extremely closed state, and this extends to all media. I mean, it's all of the newspapers, all of the art, et cetera.
What did Chekhov do wrong?
That's a great question. I should get a
censored. Other than be one of the greatest writers that ever lived.
I should ask them for a censored copy.
He sure wasn't anti-Soviet.
Right. No. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you would think that it's only overtly political messages that are being censored, but that's not the case. I mean, they're talking about drug abuse. They're talking about suicide. They're talking about social issues that we wouldn't consider to be, quote, dangerous, which is why I think a dangerous act is such an interesting concept, because it doesn't necessarily have to be something that you would consider dangerous to be pushing the boundaries. And that's why I think their art is so important.
Does Belarus look the most like a former Soviet republic of all the former Soviet republics?
That's an interesting question, if we could get like a ranking. I mean, I know they fall lowest when organizations like Freedom House do studies on repression and censorship. They tend to be at the bottom of the pack. So I guess it depends what you consider Soviet.
How did Alexander Lukashenko come to power in the first place?
Well, so they achieved independence in 91, and then in 94 held their first election. And he was, we think he was legitimately elected at that time. And future opposition leaders, including Andrei Sannikov, who we feature in the film, who ran for presidency in 2010 and then was arrested, were actually a part of his cabinet. And many of them resigned in protest really within a couple of years as it became clear what his intentions really were.
The film we're talking about, called Dangerous Acts, is airing tonight on HBO at 9 p.m. I am speaking with the filmmaker, Madeline Sackler. Andrei Sannikov, was arrested because there were protests after the election, and so the government just simply said he was behind them and he was creating a dangerous situation, they could throw him in prison?
Exactly. So the night of the election, it really wasn't a question of whether he and the other opposition candidates would be arrested, but it was when and how. And so he attended the peaceful protest at the square with his wife and about 50 or 60,000 other residents of Minsk to protest the rigged election. And within several hours was beaten and arrested and not heard from for several days, as was his wife.
Did the election galvanize the Free Theater to into action, into doing certain kinds of productions?
Yeah, I mean, you know, immediately that was a very, very scary and uncertain time. So on January 1st, the theater fled to New York City. And we really didn't know what would happen.
The whole group came here.
The whole group
came here. Is
that
when you met them?
No, I had met them the previous June. So we had no idea, of course, when we started making the film that this would happen. But they fled here, and then neither we nor they had any idea if any or all of them would ever be able to return home. And so we began following that, you know, period of uncertainty as it became unveiled over the course of that year.
In the documentary, the actors talk about a time when they were arrested during a live performance. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, there was one performance when they and all of the members of the theater, as well as children, were rounded up onto a bus with the secret police and put in a holding cell overnight. And it was very fortunate and actually kind of a example of why we're hoping that this film can be helpful to them long term, because the next day, one of their supporters, Tom Stoppard, wrote a piece that was printed around the world in the media about their arrest, and they were mysteriously let go.
And that's when they came to New York.
No, this was several years before the film, actually. So during the film, they fled the country, fortunately, before any of them came to harm, and then half of them did end up returning.
Did they perform in New York? They also performed at the Edinburgh Festival, didn't they?
They did. It's interesting because they have sort of like a split life. You know, in Belarus, they're they're working illegally. So they're totally underground. In a way, they're criminals in their own country.
How do they survive?
Well, then internationally, they're heroes in a way. So they're performing on some of the best stages in the world, right here in New York at the Public. They performed recently at the Globe. In the film, they perform at the Fringe Festival. And so like any other theater, you know, they're competing for box office and, and finding ways to be supported.
But that suggests that Belarus lets them out and allows them to do what they do for the rest of the world, even if it doesn't allow them to do it in Belarus.
Yeah, it's a question I ask them all the time, and it's not one that's easy to answer. I mean, it's that uncertainty I was talking about. Like, they're sort of constantly living in this gray area, which itself is not even really defined. And so they're walking this line trying to figure out at what point are they pushing the boundaries too far, which is, you know, half of them decided that they had, which is why they now remain in exile. And the other half decided, you know what, I think we can keep going back and trying to do what we do, but you can absolutely cross the line.
So, well, there are often concerns also about family members and friends and loved ones.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, so Sannikov, the presidential candidate, about 2 weeks before the election, one of the members of his campaign staff was actually found hung in his apartment. Other people have disappeared in Belarus, and other people have just been run out of the country. So to be honest, you never know is the short answer.
And they obviously worry about that. It's a reason to live in exile. On the other hand, when you leave people behind, they become vulnerable.
Yeah. When I started making the film, I kept asking them, if you're able to be abroad so often, why do you go back? Like, why don't you just stay here? All of them talk about how New York is their favorite city. You know, so why wouldn't you try to stay in New York? And by the end of making the film, I became so sympathetic to them. I mean, it's just hard to explain what home is to somebody and how important that is to your life.
It is interesting that they do the kind of experimental theater that we are used to here. So they are very sophisticated about making theater.
They're incredible artists. I mean, I think that was what initially drew me to them, was that in a way it's almost like staged documentaries. So they're able to bring true stories to the stage in theatrical ways, which I think is amazing.
Dangerous Acts airs tonight on HBO at 9 p.m. For more information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to filmmaker Madeline Sackler for being on our show to talk about it.
Thanks so much for having me.